Welcome to Food Fix, where we talk with innovators who are figuring out how to better feed the world. I'm your host, Shayna Roth. Is it okay to give food to a food pantry that you wouldn't eat yourself? Can you have another farmer sell your strawberries at the local farmer's market? These are some of the ethical conundrums Dr. Paul Thompson presents at the beginning of his new book, From Field to Fork, Food Ethics for Everyone. When we think of ethics, we probably think of a rule book that people like doctors, politicians, and lawyers follow. So what do ethics have to do with your breakfast? Dr. Thompson argues that ethics and food systems actually go hand in hand. It's one thing to feed people, it's another thing to feed them ethically. Dr. Thompson is the W.K. Kellogg Chair in Agricultural, Food, and Community Ethics at Michigan State University. He is the author of over 13 books. His new book, out this week, is called From Field to Fork, Food Ethics for Everyone. Hello, Dr. Thompson, and welcome to the Food Fix.
Hello, Shannon.
So let's say you're talking to a student who has no experience in food systems, food culture, or food ethics, and they ask you, what are food ethics? All I know about food is I get it from a drive-thru. What do you say to them?
Well, food ethics is a way to ask better questions about our food system. That's the way I like to think of it. One of the things I really avoid in the book is telling people what they ought to eat. It's not really so much about making better choices about what to eat, although certainly questions like that can be associated with food ethics. It's really about thinking about the way that our food system is structured, the way that production, distribution, and consumption of food affects other people, actually more than other people, the way it affects animals, the way it affects the environment. And thinking a little more carefully about all those ways in which our food system operates is what I think food ethics is about.
That's a great explanation. I like that. It's about everything and everybody.
Unfortunately, it is, right. A little bit too much, right?
So before we get into your book, how did you get involved in this mammoth of a field?
Well, it was kind of an accident. As a graduate student back in the 1970s, I was interested in environmental issues. I thought of myself as an environmentalist, and I was working on a dissertation on ethics in nuclear power. I kind of envisioned myself having a career working on similar kinds of environmental issues, but I landed at Texas A&M University, and the dean of agriculture there had decided that agriculture was heading into an era where it would face a lot of challenges, and that the current faculty in agricultural universities just were not prepared to think and talk about the ethical nature of those challenges. So I got an opportunity to develop an undergraduate course in agricultural ethics, is what we were calling it in those days. And I found myself getting more and more deeply interested in those issues. And gradually, that's become my full-time occupation.
Now, when you started out, was this something that was really being heavily explored? And if it wasn't, why not?
Well, I sometimes joke that one good thing about doing food ethics was that the day I started doing it in 1981, I was immediately one of the top five people in the field. That was five out of about three. I think there was really nobody doing this work. I overstate that just a little bit. I did immediately connect up with two or three other people. And there was already work going on vegetarianism. Vegetarianism is a very old subject in philosophy. It goes all the way back to the ancient Greeks. Aristotle debated about vegetarianism. And there were also people thinking about the issues of world hunger and about food security. But aside from those two fairly specific topics, it was not something that people in philosophy were thinking about. And frankly, even in colleges of agriculture, there were very few people who would have used the word ethics to talk about the hard problems that they were all beginning to see that they faced.
In your book, you discuss the fundamental problems in food ethics. Can you tell us what some of those are?
I think the fundamental problem in food ethics really is food security. But I think it's a problem that's not well understood by most people, including a lot of the non-specialists that have taken a crack at it. I think that we come at that problem from the experience of either, you know, having been approached on the street by somebody who says they're hungry and they need some help, or perhaps we've gone to the grocery store and they're conducting a food drive and we're supposed to buy some canned goods or our church or something like that. And we tend to think of food security in terms of people who need to be given some food. They need a food handout. And I think what this overlooks is that on a global basis, a lot of the people that face the most serious problems in food security are actually farmers. The estimate is that a little more than 50% of the people who are in extreme poverty, that's an official United Nations definition, mm-hmm. less than a dollar a day in income, about 50% are farmers, and another 20 or 30% derive their living from other things that are related to food production. They may be working in agriculture, or they may be driving trucks or doing occasional labor on farms. So these people may need food at a given time of the year, but what they also need is a more secure income. And ironically, one of the ways that we would make their income more secure is to see a general rise in the price of food. Yeah. So ironically, one of the ways that we can actually increase food security is to increase the price of food. Now, of course, that's not true for people who live in cities and do, in fact, depend on various kinds of charity or food assistance. But what's striking about the fundamental problem of food ethics is the way that the security of producers is in this strange tension with the food security of poor people who live in cities and don't actually work in the food system.
So how do consumers' choices play into food ethics, and how are they affecting food producers?
Certainly one of the ways in which they've traditionally affected food producers is that people have, I think, quite naturally gone for the cheapest food. And I think that one of the things that is starting to be fairly broadly appreciated here in the last 10 years is that that has had a lot of undesirable spillover effects. It's tended to drive the quality of our food to the lowest common denominator. It's led to foods that are less good for us in terms of their nutrient quality, less fresh, more highly processed. And those are all fairly straightforward ways in which always going for the cheapest food has ethical implications. It also is linked to the problem we just talked about. It's driven the global price of food down as the food systems become more and more industrialized and focused on industrial efficiencies. And ultimately, that's not good for farmers. Farmers have seldom benefited from some of these changes in technology over the last 200 years. And I think the other thing that needs to be borne in mind is just the way that our broad, complex system of agricultural policies, trade policies, affect food on a global basis. Too often, we subsidize agricultural production. And this not only leads us to having less quality food, less nutritious food, it actually has distorting effects on the way the whole food system operates.
Now, when you mentioned the price differences, I know a lot of people, when they see something marked organic or all natural, they think, oh, that just means $3 more. What does it really mean? And how does that tie into ethics? Is it better?
Well, one of the reasons I think why ethics has really picked up so much in Europe is that Europeans have gone into not just organic, but a fairly large array of label-based ways to buy food. Local would be in that. Certainly, labels that refer to fair trade would be another example. We do quite a bit of fair trade coffee in the U.S. And in each case, what you're doing is referring to some feature about the way the food is processed. There's no way to perform a test on a coffee bean and tell whether or not it was produced under fair trade or not. You actually have to have a way of monitoring the production system to see whether the producer's got a fair price. And organic is actually something quite similar to that. It means much less about the actual final quality of the food than it does about the way that it was produced. It means that the farmer didn't apply any synthetic chemicals or fertilizer in the production process. But ironically, organic doesn't necessarily imply that it was produced by a small family farm, you know, with a red barn and cows out in the field. Some of the organic foods that we get are produced by very large-scale industrial producers.
Let's talk about bioengineering our food. What are your thoughts on bioengineering food, and does there have to be this sort of big debate going on?
Yeah, this is something that's really occupied me for a lot of my career. I really sometimes, you know, have tried to get away from this issue, but I don't seem to be able to escape it. I do think that the techniques for improving crops, especially through new ways of getting genes from other kinds of plants into those crops, can be quite beneficial, and that some of the bioengineered foods have had some environmental benefits. But what they don't do, or at least haven't done so far, has been to really lead us away from what I would call an industrial monoculture. An industrial monoculture is a field, all of the same kind of plants, managed by lots of machinery, problems that are associated with soil quality, runoff, irrigation, the list goes on and on. GMOs is the acronym for bioengineered foods. While they have actually, I think, improved some chemical use, they haven't actually really gotten us away from some of those problems. So I guess to get back to your question.
It's a big question.
It is a big question. There's potential in this field. There are other ways that techniques might be used. There have been proposals for producing crops that have special nutrients. One of the real poster children for this technology is golden rice, which is a food that has the ability to fix vitamin A. It doesn't actually have vitamin A in it. It's a rice variety that might be very useful in parts of the world where rice is the dominant thing that people are eating. It might really address some health issues in some parts of the world. But ironically, golden rice was on the cover of Time magazine way back in 1990 or 1991. Here it is 15 years later, and we still don't have golden rice. So part of the problem with even golden rice has been it's a problem of hype. It's gotten a lot of publicity and not really enough appreciation of some of the hard work that it takes to actually bring a technology like that to fruition.
So what are you hoping readers learn from your book, and what are you hoping they get out of your book?
So I hope that it is thought-provoking and that it helps people think about and understand the way the food system operates a little better than they do right now. But to take that case of selling strawberries at the farmer's market as the example, I'm not telling you not to buy strawberries down at the farmer's market. I'm just pointing out that there are rules at many farmers markets which insist that the farmer that's standing there selling you the strawberries has to have actually grown it herself or himself. And that's partly just because people like to think they're dealing with the farmer themselves. But those rules can actually run counter to some things that we think of as very ordinary kinds of things to do. I mean, two farmers who are neighbors want to trade strawberries occasionally and take turns going to the market, we might say, where's the harm in that? But that can actually escalate into even further problems, and did actually out in Oregon a couple of years back when similar kind of horse trading among farmers resulted in some contaminated strawberries getting on the market. And it took weeks for food safety specialists to be able to figure out where those contaminated strawberries came from. So really just trying to get people to appreciate the convoluted nature of our food systems and to be able to think a little more sophisticatedly about some of these issues.
Now, I have a question. Your book is dedicated to Eudora Vasquez. Who is that?
That's my daughter.
Is it?
It is, yes.
Why'd you dedicate this one to your daughter?
You know, I guess I could say I dedicated one to my wife, I dedicated one to my parents, and now I'm getting around to my children, right? Dory was my first child, and I think anyone who's had kids knows that the first one is special because that's the one that really changes your life. I love all my kids equally, but when that first one comes, it's kind of like a whole new world for you.
So you start book tours next week, including a reading at Schuller Books on June 22nd.
That's right.
In Okemos near Michigan State. What are your other stops and what's it like to be on the road on a book tour?
Well, I'll be able to tell you what it's like in a week.
Is this your first one?
My first one is next Monday in Seattle. And then I've got another one in Bellingham, Washington, and one in Portland, Oregon, and one in Berkeley, California. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a new thing for me. I've done academic books before, as you mentioned in your intro. Mm-hmm. I've got actually a long list, but it'll be a little scary to be talking to real people instead of other professors for a change.
Well, I hope this was a good prep for you. Well, good luck to you, and thank you so much for being on our show today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
And safe travels on your tour.
Thank you.
Paul Thompson is a professor at Michigan State University and the W.K. Kellogg Chair in Agricultural, Food, and Community Ethics. And thank you for listening. What ethical food systems, conundrums, or quandaries have you run into, and how did you resolve them? Email us at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you have any questions or comments, email us at foodfixpodcast@gmail.com. We can't wait to hear from you. The Food Fix is produced and edited by Ali Hussein, Casey Wurst, and myself, Shayna Roth. Karina Basket is our managing editor. Our theme music is the song Watchin' My Garden Grow by two of our favorite Michigan artists, Lindsay Liu and Josh Rilko. Funding for the podcast is provided by the Global Center for Food Systems Innovation at Michigan State University, a development lab funded by USAID. Have a great day!